Here's where it gets a little bit more complicated.
No crunches, no sit-ups.
Yeah. I need to warm up. Everything will be okay once the sun comes up.
I might not be enjoying it at this point in time, but the highs are always bigger than the lows.
I would just trial and error, simple as that.
I found it a really powerful analogy.
No. No, we'd be in that problem.
Our times don't mean anything.
And then I ran out of the aid station, having to get the ice out.
I promised that we'd go to the pub, and so I ran the last 4K.
Solid midpack time.
But when you start to kind of unpack all the practical nuances of that, it actually becomes a lot more challenging.
That's always the trickiest question to answer, I'll be honest.
So physically, yeah, I was pretty broken.
We're just recording into a tin cup.
This is your local neighbourhood podcast.
Hi, and welcome to Tales from the Midpack. I'm your host, Rebecca Hunt. I'll be bringing you stories from everyday runners, experts, and some race recaps. Today we have an interstate race recap from the Feral Pig Ultra in Western Australia, and we're speaking to Peter Child, who toughed it out this incredibly challenging event. So welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So Pete is an accomplished, experienced runner who is well known in the running community. But I have my standard first two questions. I realise I don't know the answer to these. So the first standard one is, how long have you been running and what got you into it?
Oh, I think I'm pretty much a newbie. So maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And I started running because I started cycling and someone at my work said running would be good for my cycling fitness.
Okay.
I think it was a little bit of a lie. And from there it ended up being, you know, sort of like a Cleland Park run maybe, and then TRSA events.
Yep.
So I remember doing a social 12-kilometre thing in Blair National Park, which took me like 2 hours or something. I thought, wow, some of these people were going around for their second loop, and I was like, they're crazy.
That was my very first trail run, was an 11K. It was the Orabilla down to McGilligott's.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered my shock that there were people who were about to turn around and go back the other way.
Back.
What are they up doing? It's insane. Yeah.
Had to get a lift up the hill, I think.
Yeah. The rest of us drove back to the cafe and went to the cafe. Yeah. So, and when you aren't running, what do you get up to?
Not much, really. I used to have a bit of a hobby doing Lego stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But it takes a fair bit of time. So out of, recreational activities, it's pretty much running.
Okay.
And the rest of the time goes to all the other things in.
Yep, because you've got 6 kids.
Yes.
That would take up some time and then some.
It does.
And a new job, I think, as well.
Yep. So recently started a couple weeks, maybe a month ago. And then, yeah, I think on my first week, I was like, oh, I need to take some leave. Is that okay? To go and do this miler. So, yeah.
Yeah, wow. And with your Lego, what's the most epic thing you ever made?
Oh, 1 year I did a group build with a friend, and we built a massive display for Bricolade in the city at Easter.
Yeah.
And we had a big, like a Jurassic Park layout with, you know, the dinosaurs and stuff. And then we had a circus layout and some castle layout.
Wow.
And an amusement park layout. And it was sort of all just kept going around. So that was a little bit ambitious and took us most of a year, I think.
Oh, wow.
from when we sort of started planning, which was the year before, to when we finished it, it was a lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep.
So sometimes I get a little bit focused on on something.
Focus, that's a nice euphemism.
Yes. Right?
So in May, you did the Run Adelaide 100.
Yeah.
Which was your first official 100K race.
Yes.
Yeah. And your longest distance ever, which was, it was 116 actually.
Yeah.
The 100K.
Yeah.
Inverted commas. So how was that first 100K experience?
Yeah, I tried it, I think, the year before, just as a solo run, and I got a bit over 100 and I got washed out and frozen and had enough.
Yeah.
So it was good going back to it. I had a bit of a foot thing going on, which made probably the last 40 something kilometers not particularly pleasant, but I had some lovely pacers who put up with walking it in. I think we were second to last.
So what was going wrong with your foot?
It was bruised on the bottom, tender.
Okay.
And I tried changing my shoes and stuff, and it was just one foot, but yeah. When we got onto that concrete for the last 12K.
Because you're just along the coast on the footpath.
I had a giant, the next day I had this big elephant, balloon foot thing happening.
Yeah.
And I was okay. That's fun. it was some...
Ow. Yeah. And you said you couldn't have done it without your friends. So they got you through that last 40.
Yeah. I had to... one of my friends, Tim, paced me from about 70, and Amanda joined us at Flinders and stuff. So I think that's probably the most excruciatingly painful, 40 kilometres Tim's ever done in his life. But oh well.
Yeah, it's hard to go a different pace than what's normal. Now, you had never had any intention of doing 100K, so what changed your mind?
I think I'd been training for Wonderland for a couple of years, and it kept getting
COVID cancelled.
And I think we'd just finished doing a build for it, and my coach said, and it got cancelled, and I was like, God, pretty grumpy.
Yeah.
And he was like, why don't you go and run Adelaide? Why don't you go do the, run Adelaide 100 course? And I think I sort of said, maybe, something I shouldn't have, and I won't say it on radio. and then I think I got my stuff together and went and had a go. So I sort of felt I'd had a bit of unfinished business with that course.
Yeah.
And, but I wasn't not particularly too interested in longer distances. But this year I did volunteering at the Irrational.
Mm-hmm.
At about 188K, so it was an aid station. So I did that, and I thought, this looks interesting. And then when they said, we're going to move it to the Flinders, and I did the Hubert 50.
Yeah.
And I've done a bit of running around in the Flinders, and I thought, 4 days up at the Flinders just would be awesome.
Yeah.
So stupidly, I signed up for that.
And so now you need to build up to it.
Yeah, so my
coach, part of what all this is.
He said apparently you need to do a 100-miler before you can do a 200-miler, which I sort of slightly disagree with, because I think, halfway through the 200, you'll have done the 100. So
yeah, I know someone who's done a 200-miler without having done 100K.
Yeah.
They did suffer a lot. But they did it. Yeah. The 100-miler that you did end up signing up for was the Feral Pig, as you said, in Western Australia. So what made you choose that one?
So I needed a 100-miler between now and next April, and there was the Feral Pig and GSER or something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. The Great Southern... I know Beck Morton did that one. Yes.
It had...
It's tough.
It had entry requirements
on it.
Feral Pig did not.
Okay, so, well, that made it easy.
All my dad's side of his family are in Western Australia, so I thought, that'd be nice.
Yeah, and you conned Ronnie into signing up for it too?
Sure, she might have convinced me to sign up.
Oh, you reckon?
Maybe.
Who's blaming who?
Well, the other way around. I think we're both doing the Irrational next year.
Yeah.
And I said to her I was going to do this, and she said, I'll sign up too.
Yeah.
So that was good.
For listeners, if you haven't heard, Ronnie was on recently talking about her 500-kilometre stage race, the Sink or Swim. So you can go back a couple episodes and check that out, hear from her and Cherie, who also did that 500K. But you did the Feral Pig. Now, about half of the field DNF'd. So I'm assuming it is one tough 100 miler and one hell of a first 100 miler. So I don't know much about the event itself. I just have heard people say it's really tough and looking at the DNF rate. So what is it that makes this event so tough?
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I guess I don't have anything to compare it to. It starts at midnight, which I guess sort of throws you out a little bit. A bit of a weird one because you haven't slept all of that previous day, so you sort of, and then you start at midnight.
Yeah.
The heat was something I thought was going to be the biggest problem.
Yeah.
Because the couple of YouTube videos you can watch show people cooking out in the heat.
Yeah.
Of the day, and I'm not a big heat fan, but I sort of thought, well, we had a 40-hour cutoff.
Okay.
Surely it's surely possible.
That's fairly generous. Yeah.
It's a generous cutoff. I think the elevation is, I guess, the thing you never really think about.
Mm.
Or you think to yourself, oh yeah, 10Ks, I can run that in an hour.
So what was it? It was 4,700?
Yeah, it went down a bit. It was a bit annoying.
Damn hills having ups and downs.
It's funny because we were running with some people who had run it before, and I was sort of like, where's the tough bit?
Mm.
And they were sort of like, they said it's much, much later, as you're getting into the village. It's tough there and it's tough somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, well, I don't have to worry about that just yet. But yeah, a bit later on, it was tough going into the village. There were some climbs wasn't sort of expecting.
Yeah. In the lead up to this event, you got some pole training from Mick Kite to help you with all that elevation.
Yeah.
So you hadn't used poles before?
No.
Okay.
Sort of sitting on the fence a little bit.
Okay.
I didn't really. I think maybe I talked to my. Maybe my physio, and he sort of said there's no evidence that it improves performance, but if you think it does, maybe it does.
Maybe it does.
So
how was the technique? Were you able to do it the way you were taught in the event, or were they just a bit awkward, or how'd it go?
I really liked having the poles. I think there's a whole bunch of this gravel. Ball bearing gravel stuff on some of the roads, and I definitely would have taken a few tumbles if I hadn't had the sticks.
Okay.
So yeah.
So they were worth it even just for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for balance.
It was mainly I've been carrying them. I've been trying to use them so that I'm ready for the 200.
Because I've heard there's a real knack to using them.
Yeah. I thought you'd just plod along with it, but I think you definitely would pay to train with them.
Yep.
Like, I guess all things, don't do it as your first thing.
No, the old nothing new on race day. How did you go with planning and organising and all the logistics of getting ready for an interstate event?
Yeah, usually I'm a pretty focused individual when it comes to those sorts of planning things, but I sort of winged it a little bit, which apparently is not really a good thing to do. So I had the flight organised, and I had some relatives offer for me to stay with them at the...
Yep.
And my dad also flew over with me, so that was really good because I hadn't booked any accommodation or anything. And on Thursday night, I sort of threw a whole bunch of stuff in a bag.
Oh, without really like...
Just like I had sort of the
working out what you need
there, and I was sort of...
Yep.
I chucked all the stuff in and anything I thought maybe I could use. I think I packed all the mandatory stuff in the what do they call those?
The hydration pack?
Like a pack, yeah.
Yep.
In my pack. Because I thought I'll take that on the plane just in case the bag doesn't show up at the other end.
Yep.
So I sort of thought I'd had enough stuff, but Normally I would be like a plan a little bit more detail. I thought sort of went, well, just 2 drop bags will do. And I just put like infinite in them.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, maybe I'll pick up some chocolate biscuits when I'm there or something.
So you didn't take food over with you?
No. I just packed about 9 or 10 flasks of infinite.
Yep.
And thought, oh, well, they'll have stuff at aid stations and mm-hmm. things. So, yeah, it was a bit not probably the best.
So did you have everything you needed in the end, or were there some things that you regretted not taking?
I had a Garmin charge cable that I had a cheapie off Amazon, and it didn't work.
Oh.
And I needed to charge a couple of times, so that was a bit annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky Ronnie had her cable with her at 3 o'clock in the morning when she was waiting at the finish. So I was like, oh, can I borrow that?
Yeah.
And I nearly went with just a synthetic top because it's supposed to be hot and the weather's supposed to be hot. And my dad said, oh, I might get cold at night. So I took the Io Merino long sleeve hooded thing. I just sort of threw that in and I went, but if I hadn't taken that, I think I would have been in big trouble.
Yeah, I think you credited that with, like, you would have DNF'd without it.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I think I would have got through the first night, and obviously the day was hot, but the second night it got cold again and then it started raining.
Yeah.
And it didn't really. I remember when I was leaving the village at about 3:40, I said to someone, oh, it's raining. And they said, oh, it'll go away in a few minutes. And it didn't.
No.
And I had a, like a poncho space blanket.
Yep.
It's like both in one.
Oh, okay.
So it's like an emergency rain jacket and a space blanket. And I put that on top. And yeah, I think if I hadn't had those two things, I would have been a very cold, wet, sad individual.
Yep. Ouch. Did you, with your new job and working up to going, did you have the headspace really? Like you're saying, this is a bit unusual in the way you kind of pack last minute. Did you just not have the time and space
pretty busy. Like normally I'd spend maybe a bit more time with like the course profile and thinking about, you know, what time will I be at what spot. And so I use this ultrapacer.com website.
Okay.
So you chuck in a GPX file and
and
you can put in aid stations and cutoff times, and it basically gives you a bit of a little printout of, you know.
Sounds really good.
Yeah.
Like, is it a free website?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I think I paid the fee for something.
Okay.
Only because I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, it can. So I made a 30-hour plan and a 35-hour plan, and yeah, so I got in about 38 hours.
Oh wow!
But yeah, I guess it just sort of gives you an idea. Yeah. Like for my dad, you know, I could say, oh well, you know, this aid station's available, and I'll be there maybe about that time.
Yep. Possibly. Yeah. If you're lucky.
If you're lucky.
So for this one, you didn't have a clear idea what you were in for. Was that better or worse? You've kind of experienced both, where you've been organized and you've looked at it all beforehand, and then this one where you're a bit, oh, didn't have time.
Yeah, I think it's just a learning lesson. Like I've done a couple of ultras where I probably haven't given it the respect that it deserved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a learning lesson.
You pay. Yeah.
Right, you do.
You do pay. Now, you said you plan to have 2 aid stations. So one was about 71K in and the next was 124. Did that seem right? And were you right about being able to just use what was at the aid stations, or do you wish you'd plan more drop bags?
Yeah, I should definitely have.
Yeah.
Maybe nailed. I guess so. The aid stations did have food, but I didn't really nail down, you know, what I was going to eat or how much or how many calories, or come up with a plan that maybe my brain might have been able to execute, you know, when you're quite tired. So normally I feel with Infinite, so I'd go, you know, so many grams of carbs an hour or whatever, but it sort of got a bit sloppy trying to get the Infinite in, and then didn't eat, and a couple of times I was quite hungry, and then I didn't stop and mix up more Infinite when I should have, and so
you weren't really able to keep track. And then do you think you got into calorie and carb deficit?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, you always get into calorie deficit, but if your body thinks it's getting in, it will slow you down.
Yeah.
So, ease up.
Yeah, it will. Yeah. And you said you started at midnight, which is tough start. Were you awake the whole day?
Yeah.
We managed to get enough in, you awake the whole day.
Yeah. I flew over on about lunchtime, so that's good.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So obviously that guaranteed that you went through two nights. So what was it like? You said it was really different. Did it make it super tough?
I didn't really notice it probably until the second night, and then I was pretty whacked.
Yeah.
Definitely. my brain was just not functioning, and I was all over the track, and I was going very, very slowly.
Yeah. Yeah. So it hurt. Two nights hurts. Is that?
Yeah.
When you set off, were you able to pace yourself well? I mean, it's classic in events to go out too fast, but with a 100-miler, being steady is really important.
We all flew off.
Oh, really?
The guy at the front was just...
Like feral pigs?
Flying, you know,
my goodness.
Been doing sub 5 minute, and we all thought we were taking it easy, but he was hammering it. And then I think I was chatting to Ronnie, and she said the first 30 kilometers is runnable. And I said, what's the rest of it?
Yeah,
anyway, we figured that out after a while. So there was a lot of fairly flat, easy single trail at the start. And probably the first 30 Ks was, we were flying along.
Yeah.
Which I guess is a bit silly, but it was runnable. So we ran when we could run.
Yeah. Now the weather, you said it was up and down, like it's known for its heat, but the nights got super, super cold. How did your body respond to being, like you said, you needed a space blanket at one point and then baking 30 degrees.
Yeah.
Like, did you have any dizziness or any other, like, problems?
No, I didn't. Ronnie had some problems with, I think maybe she got too hot, but, yeah, she was not particularly well.
Oh, okay.
So I think maybe the heat knocked a few other people around.
So do you think it was the weather that knocked Ronnie out of it?
No, I think, but it was like, I think I've got like this little temperature sensor thingy for my watch.
Yeah.
So you wear it on your vest, because otherwise you get your wrist temperature, which seems to stay pretty constant.
Okay, yeah.
So it got up to about 31 the first day, and it got to like 35 the second
day. Yeah.
But I do remember, you know, having all my stuff on because it was raining, and then like an hour later I was stripping off into a synthetic because it was like boiling.
Wow. Now you mentioned your coach, who's Nick Muxley.
Mm-hmm.
So how did Nick help you prepare? Oh, hang on. I didn't even realize the dog was drinking. That's my dog drinking water back from a walk. Thanks for the slurps. How did Nick prepare you for this epic event?
We actually had some really good... it can be difficult sometimes to get really good build because, you know, I usually get injured or have a niggle or something and it throws you a little bit. But I reckon we had 3 or 4 good build sets leading up into it. I mean, we use a Training Peaks software, so from a Training Peaks perspective, we pretty much nailed the build up. So I was pretty stoked.
Awesome.
I didn't have any, body breaking down incidents.
Now you packed an interesting item. It was your windscreen shade sail.
Yeah.
Sounds like it came in really handy that second night when you used it to have a power nap.
Yeah. So I wanted to try to carry it because I thought for the Irrational it would be useful. So on some of the ultra fast packing forums where people talk about, lightweight gear, they said, I remember reading something where it said, you can get one of these things, it doesn't cost big piles of money. They're like $5 from Kmart. They're insulated, they weigh nothing.
Yeah.
Throw it on the ground and you can
so
have
it's just that layer of protection from what the cold of the ground and the rocks.
It's a little bit nicer than actually having a dirt nap.
And it sounds like you had a few. I think you had 3 in the end.
Yeah.
3 little 10-minute naps.
Yeah. That was the first one was really, I really needed it.
So I think you described your mind was fuzzy, your head felt thick, you were just
all over the place.
All over the place on the trail.
Yeah, 10 minutes and I was a new person.
Yeah. That's amazing, isn't it? I think you were, I'm trying to remember what your story was, that you were told the aid station was really close and it was downhill, but you're like, nah, don't believe you, heard that too many times, I'm going to have a dirt nap right here.
Yeah, that's right, I wasn't going to get up.
No.
But it was pretty close, but
it worked.
Yeah.
It solved it. So you had 2 more power naps, did they really help as well?
I think you get neuromuscular fatigue as well. Your brain firing the same muscle sets again and again and again. And you definitely notice when you start up again that your legs are going a lot faster than they were when you stopped.
Right.
So I don't know if that's anything.
Yeah.
Just giving them a couple of minutes, but I guess having the breaks in there is a good thing.
So do you think you'll take a power nap approach to Irrational, or do you think you'll be getting some decent sleep?
Ah, that's a very interesting. I need to spend a bit more time looking at the Irrational course, and I want to go up and do a couple of the segments because I know, that St. Mary's Peak loop is not fast.
Well, you would have done that in the 50K. Yeah. I did that in the marathon. Yeah. It's nasty.
And that's at about 100 kilometres in. So, and there are a few other quite interesting spots. So
we might
be pushed for time. I mean, it would be nice to, have a decent rest and a stop somewhere. But
yeah. But if you are able to power nap and they work really well for you, you could possibly take the approach of just, I'll do it when I feel ready. I'll get out my windshield.
I've hopefully got a couple of buddy runners for the Irrational. So hopefully they'll be able to stop me from getting lost.
You said that that shade sail was advice that you got and it's a good thing to carry. What were some other things you had that were you very glad to have had? So obviously your Eye Merino top.
Oh,
but
definitely. And the space blanket.
Space blanket poncho.
Yeah. It was a bit of a last minute. I wasn't expecting sort of rain. We didn't have to wear take the seam sealed jacket or whatever. If I'd taken a Garmin charge cable, that would have been really, really good. Like one that worked.
Yeah, one that worked.
I put a spare pair of socks in that I should have taken. We had the aid stations.
Yeah.
I could have had a change of socks before 120 kilometres.
Right. So you would change socks more regularly.
Yeah, why not? And yeah. If you've got the time and you're going to sit down.
Yeah.
And I took some time, a couple of times to, you know, just put some like pseudo cream
yeah.
on various bits of my feet where
yeah.
I sort of felt it might, you know, get a blister. And because I've learned, yeah, it pays to take a bit of time to look after those things.
Yes.
Otherwise they can get pretty messy.
Yeah.
So that was a good strategy.
Mm. I use Sudocrem quite often as well, but the last event it didn't work for me and I'm not sure what the difference was.
Hmm.
I got some nasty blisters which I don't normally get. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't
on that one.
I've had like like a blister on the back of an ankle. Oh, that really sucked a bit.
Yeah.
But this time, touch wood, you know, I was
great.
I was lucky. One of my little toes got a bit, I think it got a bit damp and now it's a slightly different shape. But I'm sure that'll sort itself out in the after
yeah.
some time or not.
Or not.
Yeah.
Or not, where you have it as a memento.
That's right. You can just say, look at my misshaped
oh my
small
goodness.
Toe.
Yeah, I think you also had a towel in one of your drop bags.
Mm.
Did you end up using that?
No, I was thinking of when I got into the feral village that maybe I'd have a shower and
oh, yeah.
I could
yeah.
change of clothes.
Because there's a shower at Irrational at one point.
Yeah.
I forget where it is, but I think there is a hot shower at some point.
There was, yeah, just a bit further than the Leeds
yeah.
Pass. There was a,
yeah.
there was like a caravan thing with a
okay.
with a shower
yeah.
facility. And, but yeah, no, when I got in, it was like 3 o'clock and I was wet and cold and I found a bit of concrete and lay down for a while. And then I was like, oh, this concrete's not very warm, inviting or comfortable.
Yeah.
It's time to go.
All right. Just keep going.
Yeah. Somebody else I was with
yeah.
was doing some mass and he was sort of like, you know, if we get in, I can have a 2-hour nap and then I can go and finish the last bit and I'll have plenty of time to do it. And yeah, I was like, I don't know. I think it's probably better to have a little bit of spare time at the end.
Rather than
the middle, but
just in case. Yeah.
Just in case. And the 10Ks out of the feral village was not too bad, but the last bit had stairs and hill climbs and ravine
ooh.
Stuff and
yuck.
Yeah, it wasn't the world's
nasty finish.
Most smiley feeling.
No, ouch. Now you've already talked about nutrition. I had a note here about asking about it, but obviously using Infinite. But were there things at the aid station that felt like godsends?
Yeah. At about lunchtime the first day, there was an aid station where they did like egg and bacon rolls, and they had like a massive menu of, you know, you could have pancakes and
oh wow,
they had a little powered fridge with Zupa Dupas because it was boiling hot.
Yeah,
which was awesome. And at the furthest most turnaround point, which was probably about 140 Ks, the aid station there were doing like egg and bacon sandwiches, which was just
yeah
very, very nice.
Yeah. I'm hoping they're going to be at Irrational. I remember my first marathon was the Hubert and I'd heard people go on about how amazing potatoes are.
Mm,
and I'm like,
yeah.
Potato, whatever. And then had that experience of going, oh, these are amazing, like when you're exhausted and tired.
Yeah.
And yeah. So I'm looking forward to the egg and bacon roll experience because you're not the first person who has said that they were absolutely amazing.
Food is much better
yep.
when you really need it.
Yes, that's for sure. Now, you talked about your Infinite that perhaps you should have filled up more. So you ran out a few times.
So I guess usually like I take a flask and I'll put the powder in it
yep.
and then add water at the aid stations. And so I guess a couple of times I should have done that a bit earlier.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was like halfway between aid stations and I was like, oh, well, I've run out. I won't
yeah.
stop. And, you know, I have carried plenty of water, so I could have, you know, mixed it up there
yeah.
and I didn't, and I spent like a couple of hours just going, I'll get around to it. And then finally I sat down somewhere and I was like sitting there in the middle of the dark mixing up my powder.
Yeah.
Someone came along, are you okay? Yep, I'm just sorting myself out.
Yeah. A few hours too late, but yeah. I think there was an amazing hot chocolate you were given at some point.
Yeah, yep, at the village. That was very nice. It was amusing because the lass that got up for me, she said, now, where are you going to put these poles? And I was like, I'm just there, that's fine. She said, okay, when you finish, can you, you know, bring the cup up to the thing before you leave? I'm like, no worries. So I went up. I was like, okay, I'm done. She's like, where are your poles? And I'm like, okay. I've left them behind, obviously. She's like, I'll go get them for you. And that was very nice of
her. Yeah.
But, yeah, your brain, it's not the world's, you know, most reliable thing when you're a bit tired.
No. And they're not cheap as well.
Mm.
You wouldn't want them to lose them. Are you a donated a lasagna at some point?
There's at one of the aid stations next to it, there's like a mountain bike park and it has a cafe in it. And one of the runners who's obviously maybe run it before had gone to the cafe and got like a hot lasagna.
Okay.
I was like, that's a tip for next time. Wow. You know, use that cafe. And that was particularly nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were going along together for a while and I was talking about things that we wanted to do and I was talking about the West Mac Monster.
Oh, yeah.
And because I was like, I'd like to walk that trail one day.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, I've done that.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, okay, wow. Like royalty.
Yeah.
Because that's a particularly... So I think it's like 230 kilometres with a 60-hour cut-off.
Wow.
Some years, you know, like four people finish it.
Yeah.
And you go, four. And it's not like, you know, they went there unprepared or anything. Yeah. The other people that didn't make it.
So that's sounds brutal.
It does.
Yeah. How did you go with navigation on this course?
The track was really well marked. It has these like little triangle markers. It's quite funny. People say if you see like some sticks like lying on the ground, you know, look up. And I'm like, I couldn't figure out why they were talking about this. But usually what it means is, you know, you're running along a bit of fire trail or some single track and you're concentrating on the trail. So you're looking down, you look at your feet or just in front of you. And all the markers are about 8 foot up.
Oh, wow.
In the trees.
Right.
So, you know, people lay, you know, a log across the trail when it diverges. And if you look up, you'll see where the marker is.
Because I guess here in SA, we're used to markers being kind of hip height.
Yeah. Or, you know, if we were diverging, you would expect to see like a post on the split point pointing, you know, that way.
Yeah.
They just have these like little arrows up in the trees.
So, wow.
Yeah. When you
blink and miss it.
When you see a stick on the ground pointing off the trail, you know, you look up and.
Okay.
So, yeah, that was good. I had the Garmin course loaded on that.
And Ronnie gave you some pointers at some point?
Yeah, there was a really weird weird bit as you came out of the headquarters. The trail sort of goes down and then there's like two big water pipes, like bulk water pipes, and you actually have to go between them. And I think I would have been going back and forth for some time, I think, if she hadn't pointed me down there. But yeah, like the whole course, there was a one really weird bit right at the end up the top of a hill where there was about four trails left off. And I went down pretty much every one about 150 meters and none of them were the Garmin
Okay.
So there was sort of like a little creek bed thing that was all overgrown, and that was where Garwin wanted me to go. So that's where we went.
Okay.
And that
ended up being correct?
You're not sure? Yeah, we got there.
You got there. Oh, goodness. You said you took a wrong turn 700 metres from the end?
Yeah. I can't explain that. I'm not the world's best at navigating, but I was coming in, and you sort of do this weird, like, little bit at the end.
Yeah.
And I ended up running down, and this got, and another runner was coming towards me, and I was like, oh, what have I done?
Oh, no.
And I'm like, am I going the wrong way? And he's like, yep. Okay, turn around.
Wow, after all that time to end up and wrong turn that close to the end. Now you had you mentioned your aunt and uncle live there, so they came and cheered you along.
Mm, yeah.
Did seeing people make a difference to your running?
Yeah. I guess it's a long time between when you see people, but occasionally seeing people on the course was really nice. There was like a 23-kilometer run on the Sunday.
Yeah.
So as I got to the close to the furthest part, a large contingent of people came bolting down the trail towards me, and they were all like, you know, well done, keep going. See you at the end. I was like, probably not.
Probably not. How long are you intending to wait? That's
right. But that was quite a good pick me up.
Okay, cool. And obviously Ronnie visited you as well, which is very nice of her.
She was at the finish, and she was at the finish when I got in at like 3 a.m. before you go out again.
Yeah.
And she was there waiting, so that was lovely.
Yeah, that's cool. Now, obviously we've talked about you signing up for the 200 miler and that this event was really preparation for that. Now you've posted a list of lessons that you learned from Feral Pig. So I thought it might be great to go through them with the eye of how they were preparing you for the 200 miler. So lip balm from the start.
Oh, yeah.
Your number one lesson learned.
I do that quite often.
Yeah.
I always carry, like in one of my things, I've got, you know, salt tablets, lip balm, and like Gurney goo and Suda cream and stuff.
Yeah.
But I always don't apply the lip balm.
So you have it, but you don't use it.
Yeah.
And then what happens is it just gets dry.
I think I get dry and cracked lips. Yeah. I think, you know, with the water and hydration, and you're constantly sort of drinking as well.
Yeah.
I think it dries your lips out. And I was like, not again.
Not again. change of shoes.
Yeah.
Leaving yourself some shoes in case you need them.
Yeah. I took like one pair of shoes.
Yeah.
And I rotate shoes, so I've got like plenty of shoes to take. I could have left spare pairs at, you know, two or three spots
and,
you know, got some nice cushy shoes.
Yep.
I didn't have any shoe issues. I just wore some like Nike Pegasus Trails, I think, which are like their road shoes with a little bit of grip on the bottom.
Yeah.
So they're not particularly technical shoes, but that seemed to do the trick.
Says it more about, like, in a 200 miler, you imagine your feet might want a break, just pressure in slightly different points and different cushioning, just to help them out a bit.
Yeah, I think you end up compressing your whatever padding's in your shoes, you end up compressing it quite a bit, and you change it to a different pair, and it's like, oh, these are all, you know, fluffy again.
Yeah, walking on clouds. So you mentioned your sock change already, but more socks, I've said. And winging it with nutrition, we've already touched on that. That's not a good idea. And more stuff in your bags. A plan that my brain is actually capable of executing when it is stupid from tiredness. It's a very simple nutrition plan.
Yeah. Yeah. I had it for the Adelaide 100. I had like a little card. So every time I got to an aid station, I'd pull out the card for the next thing, and it would have, you know, like it's going to be so many kilometers from here, you know, yeah. you need 3 flasks of water, you need to eat, you know, your piece of pizza and fill yeah. up your infinite or whatever. You know, it was like an idiot's guide.
Yeah.
To, you could give it to an aid station volunteer and say, you know,
this is what I need.
I'm stupid. Can you help me? Can you do these things?
Yeah.
So you don't, I've been on an aid station where someone's, you know, sat, had some Coke and left. And then later they said to me, you know, and didn't fill up water and had no water for the next 15 kilometers.
Wow.
It's like, oh, so your yeah. brain doesn't work too well sometimes. No.
The water was your next one. You said stop at all the huts, and it only took you once yeah, to learn that.
At the start.
Yeah.
From then on, I carried what I needed, and I stopped at pretty much all of the huts. And once during the day, a lass was running with me or caught up to me, and she was out. Like, she didn't go to the last hut and
yep.
ran out of water, and we were probably 8Ks from the next aid station, 5 or 8Ks. And I was like, oh, well, I've got a spare. Here you go.
Fantastic.
So she was pretty happy.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm a bit, when I run out of water, I get a bit weird.
Yeah.
As in, you know, I think it makes you feel worse than you probably are.
Yeah. Makes you feel vulnerable as well. Yeah. Yep.
So.
More aware of the thirst too. Yeah.
And, but, you know, from then on, I think I've, you know, had like half a flask in the back of my pack just in case. And I don't think I needed to take it out or anything.
Cool. But
it's good to have, know that, you know.
There's a backup there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weather, even if you don't think it could rain or get cold, take precautions and leave stuff in your drop bags.
If I'd packed more drop bags, I could have, you know, left in the nighttime ones, you know, more merino gear or jackets or whatever.
Because where the feral pig is really desert, isn't it? Deserty. Yeah. I'm trying to picture where that is in Western Australia.
It sort of feels a little bit dry, I guess, but it probably isn't, you know, from their weather perspective, it's probably been, you know, a bit wet.
I was just thinking that sometimes we underestimate in the outback how cold it gets overnight.
Yeah, I've heard that with the Hue, but I don't think it was anywhere near.
Yeah. I've heard horror stories about Hubert at night, like too, the feral, how cold it gets.
It was anywhere near as cold as what it might get up in the Flinders.
Okay.
So I'm definitely thinking, you know, about thermal pants and maybe rain pants. And
I'm also worried about we don't even have spring yet. It's about to be summer. You know, it might even be hot in April. Like, I don't know what we're going to be facing.
Bake or freeze.
Yes.
Or both.
So be ready for both.
Yes.
Yeah. sunscreen, not just for arms, but also for legs. I think you burnt your calves.
Yeah. I've never burnt my calves before. I don't even understand how it's... I think we were running in one direction, like coming back for several hours, and I could feel the skin on the backs of my calves getting nice and tight and burny.
Yeah.
So, oh, well.
For events this length, sun cream everywhere.
Yes.
Yep. flies and then a whole lot of symbols.
Oh, yeah.
Bells. Take a fly net.
Yeah.
And that made me go, oh, I haven't even thought about that for rational.
A couple of people had these like fly nets over their heads, and because running along, you know, with your poles and trying to spot flies, it's really annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Smack yourself in the face with a pole. All right. So flies are annoying. Ice. The bra bag safety pinned to my hat idea didn't work. Need another plan for ice on the head.
Yeah. So Ronnie got something at the start village, which was like a little, like a sack that goes around your neck.
Oh, great.
That you fill up with ice and stuff. So that looked pretty interesting. So I might ask her how that went. But yeah, I was sort of trying to, you know, keep some ice in a bag on the top of my head.
But I've heard, I can't remember exactly how it's described, but basically you shouldn't put ice on your head and something to do with blood vessels, and you don't actually want them to be
changing.
So you want to do it more neck. Yeah. Some people put ice down arm sleeves. And things like that. But yeah, that's another.
Will we need it?
Oh goodness, don't know.
I guess the other logistical thing is the ice melts pretty quick. And so, you know, you're going to spend a lot of time and effort. The icy poles are really good.
It probably has a bigger effect than just cooling your skin. Actually cools you from the inside.
I had this dodgy spray bottle that I got from, like, plushies online. They do every now and then, they do a clearance sale. I saw it by, you know, cheapest thing, and you find all the rubbish that they don't want. I had these like $1 pump up bottle, and it's like a mister, fine mist. So I took that was really good. But I think that's probably my best $1 buy. I thought I was just gonna have to give them to the kids because they're obviously rubbish. But yeah, I'm cool. Sold.
So I'll head fly net and a mister, now, we talked about your Garmin cable, getting a proper one, not the dodgy one.
Yes, I have to go to JB Hi-Fi's and pay the Garmin tax.
Maybe you could have left us a swag at one of the stops have a bit more of a decent kip.
I guess traveling to Perth, it's a bit different, but for, you know, more local things, I think I'll maybe go and have a look at, like, roll out swags, you know, so you don't really have to spend a lot of time, but you can just, you know, throw something on the ground and it's comfortable, and you know, if you're cold, it's got a rug or something in it.
Yeah, rather than the concrete. Bunnings wide brim hats seem popular.
Yeah. It
was Ben Hockings is always a Bunnings hat guy.
These Bunning hats on, like the wide brim, you know, either under the chin. I don't know.
Yeah. Because another option is those Legionnaires hats.
I usually wear a Legionnaires hat.
Yeah.
I thought, maybe it's worth trying out.
The Bunnings hat.
The Bunnings hat. Get a sausage in a Bunnings hat.
You said thinking ahead about the days after, packing a foam roller and a ball and things like that.
Yeah, and clothes and stuff. So, I hadn't really. We were there for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday until we flew out. So, but I, you know, packing my bag, all I'd thrown in was just like race stuff.
I forgot about the non-racing part.
And, you know, my clothes that normal people wear.
How was your recovery?
Yeah, really good.
Yeah.
I think I had a big quiet day Monday. And probably 20 minute walk, and then Tuesday we went and visited some rallies, and I was going up and down stairs, and I was like, I took a little video of me going up and down the stairs and sending it to some of my friends. I was like, you know, check this out.
Hey.
I can go up and down stairs. Because normally
can't.
It's not happening.
No. Now, obviously, some things did actually go well with all the. That was your lessons learned. So, obviously, that car sun shield for dirt naps, the top, the poncho, the Sudocrem, brakes and power naps. So, we've covered all those, but bag of wet wipes, bag of toilet paper is on your went well list.
So, I think I'm now a granddad or something. So, I was like, I said to my wife, do we have any of those wet wipes? So, I packed a bunch in a plastic bag and another bag with some toilet paper, and they had huts all the way along the trail, which had like drop toilets, but they obviously don't have any toilet paper in them.
Right.
So good to have some.
Better than leaves.
Yes, much better.
Yeah. And gaiters. Next time, take them instead of buying them at the start line.
Yeah. I mean, they stop, you know, stuff getting in your shoes. And I've got piles of them at home. I think I've got all the groovy gator, all the
colours and
stuff. So I just had them throw them in the bag. So
yeah. All good. So after all the swearing, like the flies and stuff, and the lessons learned, you said you had a blast and you can't wait for next year.
Yeah.
And there was some wording before something you said that made me go, oh, is he going to do it again next year?
Yeah, I think if Ronnie's interested, I'd definitely be happy to go back. Because I guess you know a little bit more, you know which bit of the course is where and what's coming up. And
yeah, so. Yeah. And all this is from someone who wasn't even going to run 100K.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure during that race we might not have run 100 kilometres. If you added up the running versus the walking, I'm pretty sure 100 would be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. Yeah. So what made it worth it for you, though? Like, what's changed your mind?
I guess I haven't been back to Western Australia for some time, and we used to go there all the time when I was a kid. The trail was really good. Like, the huts along this trail are really cool.
Yeah.
They've all got, water tanks on them and sleeping decks and all sorts of, benches and, the toilets and stuff.
Okay, great.
It's a well-marked trail. Yeah, it was a well-organized event, and a great bunch of people. They all seemed quite friendly. I think there was only 3 South Australians there.
Yep.
Maybe. And so they were all, WIP.
Yeah.
So it was, I really enjoyed it.
Oh, great. Cool. So I'll just ask, is there anything that you want to talk about with the event that I haven't asked about?
There were some people that were, there was a lady that was out there that I ran into a couple of times, and she had a really hard day. And I think it was getting to the end of the second day, and she had to get off the course, and she'd done like a ton, and she was really upset, and she was very upset with herself.
All right.
And I thought that was quite, that was a bit, I guess she was just working through
it all,
but she'd put in so much, and I was just in awe. Like, sometimes you see people, and it's a big challenge, and they bite it off, and they chew really, really hard. And I look at them and I go, I don't think I could chew that hard.
Yeah.
But it's inspiring to to watch some of these people, and even if they don't finish, you go, holy smoly, that was a big day.
Yeah. Yeah. They're the kind of experiences where you go, I don't know if I'm brave or crazy.
Yeah. Very, very, yeah. I think Ben Hocking wrote a blog for his event site recently, and he, I think he was talking something about, a mixture of confidence and stupidity.
Yes.
Maybe he didn't use the word stupidity. Ignorance and confidence.
Yeah.
Sometimes you go, at the end of it, you go, I'm not sure I would do that again. But you did it, and you made it.
Thank you for coming on the show today. It was really great to have you.
Thank you.
I'll put links to everything that we've mentioned. I'll find that link to that site that does the planning.
UltraPacer.com.
Yes, I'll put that on there and everything, and definitely want to check that out. And obviously, best of luck for the 200 miler in April.
Yeah,
you're doing good. I'll be up there for the 100 miler, my first. So I'm freaking out about that. So I will hobble down to the finish line, see you come in, hopefully, assuming I succeed.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things about these events, like, we're going in not knowing if we'll succeed.
The Dutchman Stern loop at the end of that will be particularly interesting.
Yes. Yeah. I saw John Songy posted a video about, which had some of the track on it. So I don't really know what I'm in for, Hawker to Corn, and it was gorgeous, like proper nice trail. Like, it's going to be tough, but it was beautiful. So that was exciting to see.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be big. All right. I'll see you in April.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Cheers.
Now, last time I said summer is around the corner, but I think I was lying. We've had some pretty crazy cold weather. But regardless, 2023 is definitely on its way with all the events that it holds. If you have some running goals next year that you would love some support in making a reality, get in touch with me at Stepping Stone Coaching. All the links are in the description. Happy trails, everyone.